Hello, welcome back to another episode of the Menswear Style Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Brooker. Today on the show, I am talking to the director of Plowden and Fallow, Richard Plowden, and just a little bit of info on Plowden and Fallow, a new contemporary luxury British fine fragrance house, born in Shropshire, a quiet backwater of deepest rural England, steeped in history, folklore, and eccentric characters. It was here that they began their journey to create the finest aromatic creations of a unisex nature. At the heart of their philosophy is the utilization of the highest quality ingredients and components crafted into fine British fragrances, which, whilst giving an inspired nod to tradition, contain a healthy dose of an eccentric modern twist. And you can find out more about Plowden and Fallow at their website, plowdenandfallow.com. We'll leave links on the show notes over at Menswear Style. But here now to talk about the brand in his own words is Richard Plowden.
Brilliant. Thank you. Thank you, Pete. Firstly, it's an absolute pleasure to be featured on the podcast. I've been a regular listener since 2021. And I didn't actually think I'd be featured on here one day, so yeah, great privilege to be here.
Oh well, the pleasure's all mine, Commander, as I like to say on a, on another Bond podcast. But well, listen, Richard, it's great to have you on. Please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about Plowden and Fallow.
Yeah, so a brief background to me: I'm 30 years old. As you said, I'm the founder and director of Plowden and Fallow. I think if I had to summarize myself, I'd say I've always been a creative. I think a mild dose of dyslexia, which I actually see as a blessing, has sort of propelled my creative spirit and in many ways helped develop Plowden and Fallow. And as I said, didn't think probably the younger me at the time that I would have been on this podcast or others, or you know, thought I was ever going to start a fragrance house. I would have been slightly perplexed, really. But there we go.
So what is your background like before you got into launching the fragrances?
So I was sort of raised in an agricultural household deep in sort of rural Shropshire, which is a county sort of lost in time in some ways, in a really nice way. So I think being raised in an agricultural household gave me a sort of green-fingered passion, to use that phrase, and indeed a deep interest in botanical world. And to this day, I think probably one of my greatest victories as a schoolboy was winning the gardening prize for 3 consecutive years running, which is a victory I don't think I've quite topped yet in my life. But yeah.
And is it too late to go back? You know, maybe get a 4 for each award?
Yes, possibly. I think, you know, whilst I'm still interested in that world and I still have a passion for the natural world, it was more sort of traditional genres of gentleman's fashion and sartorial practices and lifestyle, and a dissatisfaction really with many generic shaving products that are currently available to purchase that had a large bearing on the decision to start Plowden and Fallow. So that's how we got here today.
Well, I really want to get into Plowden and Fallow, but I'm still interested in what you studied, like beyond school, and where you got to. There was kind of a 6-year gap that I'm trying to fill in before you got to launch the brand.
Yeah, absolutely. So straight out of university, I did a master's degree, but working life, I have a background in sales. So in the auction industry, and then I worked in the property sector for a few years as well. So not necessarily a joint, but good experience, which I'm very thankful for, and has, you know, also had an impact on where I am today with the business.
And so was it just you that launched Plowden and Fallow? Is there anyone else behind you? How were the stepping stones for you getting this off the ground?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Just myself. But, you know, behind the brand, there's a sort of team of 4 or 5 sort of creative, self-employed. So without them, I really would be lost. You know, they've been great. Anyone from graphic designers through to our perfumers to, you know, other actually friends as well, to be honest, that have given advice and help from the beginning, because you know, I think starting a business, you know, it's a long process and it can be quite a lonely one. So yeah, I've been really lucky to have some great people and mentors really help alongside.
And these fellow creatives, were these people that you knew beforehand? Were these friends, these knights around your round table, or what, did you actually seek them out as such?
No, it's just a lot of networking, really. A lot of networking. Some are friends of friends. But yeah.
And what do you, so I'm curious, when you introduce yourself and to your friends, maybe hobnobbing at party, and you bring up Plowden and Fellow, how are you describing it? How is it different to other fragrance houses?
I suppose, sort of put in its most simple form, we're a niche British fragrance house, and we exist to create luxury fragrances and wet shaving products here in the UK. And that's a point I'll probably labour throughout. We have artists and craftsmen and women, but not really, that make noses not only sort of sit up and take notice, but also create a sort of metaphorical aura of confidence around those that adorn our creations, showing them off as the very best versions of themselves. I suppose that's the sort of more the simple short answer. But as a business as a whole, we take inspiration from a number of notions. I've always felt the cosmetics and fragrance industry, in my opinion, to some degree, has become the equivalent of the fast food sector, or it had done until recently. Or should I call it fast fashion, sort of with giant faceless corporations mass producing products and factory lines for shareholder profit. Whereas, you know, we still believe in sort of slow fashion and the sort of spirit reminiscent of Britain in times gone by, where products were made to last and made by hand. And just to give some examples of that, all of our products are produced here in the UK. And that goes from our leather wash bags, just to name one example, made by hand just down the road from our offices by an artisan leather maker, to our fragrance boxes, which are produced by a fifth generation London box maker in London's Dockyards, who's had the same employees working for them for 20 plus years. Mm. And all of that's very important to us. And I think the decision to work with local and artisanal producers, I acknowledge, does come at the expense of our profitability to a degree. But to us, this is vital. And these are values that we hold close, and it helps us ensure that we're an ethical business, from reducing transport miles to ensuring fair wages and supporting local people in the industry. And these are all sort of notions that myself personally and the brand, we're very passionate about.
Yeah, just hearing you talking that, picking up on that, it's interesting. I've got a friend who has been on the show. He runs a brand called Hemmingsworth, and he has the through line of his company, or the heartbeat, I should say, is that everything is made in the UK, made in England, and very sustainable. And, you know, the price kind of reflects the honesty of the brand. You know, like you say, it's not made in factory houses out in Bangladesh or anything. This is something that's entrenched in the brand, is very, very British. And I've said to him that it's a lot easier to start out like that, I believe, than kind of do it the other way around. So, for example, if the brand doesn't really take off and you're just kind of hanging on to the last rung of the ladder, and then you go, do you know what, we're going to throw all of our morals out the window here, and we're going to go to that factory house in Pakistan, and they can do a cheap run, and maybe we can just salvage what we have of the brand and sell the rest of the stock. It doesn't work like that, because your identity is what you start out with at the beginning, which is the honesty and the integrity. And it sounds like, to me, putting it back to you guys, it sounds like you're taking the same approach, where you're starting out like this, and this will be the identity of your brand going forward.
Absolutely. And, you know, we've had some great feedback. So we've been trading now for about 2 years. But previously, I was in sort of full time employment in working in other sectors. So didn't really have time to push the business. But we've had a great sort of last year. And I'd say our niche really is not only British production, but it's our strong eccentric undercurrent with a slight modern contemporary twist. That's how I describe our products. And we simply couldn't get there get there without using the creatives and the sort of great businesses that we found in the UK. I'm sure we could get there abroad, but I don't feel we would be able to produce the quality and hold our values in terms of reducing transport miles, in terms of reducing our carbon footprint, etc., if we were to do that. And the advantage to smaller businesses with working with manufacturers here is actually quite a lot of manufacturers here can cope with smaller order volumes and batches, which really helps. You know, we can order fragrance boxes by 100 at a time, whereas if you start outsourcing it, say to the Far East, you're going to have to consider, you know, a lot larger ordered quantities.
Interesting. What are the obstacles? I mean, I'm curious to know, when you start a project like this, what are the things that you really have to look out for? Because I know for a fact, like any grooming product, my sister is also in the sector, and it's branding, it's bottles, it's labeling, it's packaging, it's testing, it's getting samples. It's a real long process, or at least it was for her anyway. What was it like for you getting the samples and trying to, you know, bottle lightning, as it were?
Yeah, so this is probably something you'll have to shut me up on, because I could go on for a while. But on the face of it, it might seem like a simple exercise to start a fragrance house. And indeed, I think in the last few years, we've seen quite a few niche British fragrance houses appear as a category, which has been great. But I would sort of always urge caution, as there's some sort of large hurdles that need to be circumnavigated. And I'd say the first is cost. To bring a single fragrance to the marketplace, by the time you've considered development, testing, regulatory compliance, packaging, the cost is considerable, or can be considerable. And I'd say this is perhaps the largest barrier to new entrants. And it's not only the cost of development. I think as a smaller brand, we produce products in batches. This can mean we struggle to take advantage of purchasing power that larger cosmetics businesses have. For example, we're just about to start production of our Woodpecker shaving cream and aftershave balm. The fragrance in this product contains a large quantity of sandalwood essential oil, which we have to source from Australia, where we source it sustainably. The cost of sandalwood has significantly increased recently, meaning that in this product line alone, our sort of cost of production has doubled. And in this example, we could have opted to have used synthetic sort of sandalwood alternatives, but it was important to us that we sort of didn't cut costs and only used essential oils to fragrance our shaving products. And on cost, you can experience cost in this world in an area that, for example, we didn't even first consider. I mean, intellectual property is just one of those areas, a really important one, but one at first that went sort of straight over our head. Yeah, it's very hard to trademark a smell, but you can't just name a fragrance or a product any name you fancy. And if you did, it might lead you open to all kinds of legal issues. So
how does that work then? So you've created a product. Now you have to go to, like, what do they call it? The patent house, and get it registered.
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host, Matt Heslin, brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
Yeah, so it's through the government intellectual property house. Can't remember the name of it now. Should know the name of it.
they know you. Don't worry.
they do. But so yeah, we've had to incur a sort of number of legal costs to ensure that, you know, not only are we not infringing on other people's existing rights, but you know, our products are also protected. And it's something right. that a lot of people in the industry take quite seriously. So it's an area that you know, can cost you a lot of money if you get it wrong. And just to add on to that, the sort of third tranche of cost has been significant product development timelines, which you sort of touched on earlier. In some cases for us, it's taken 2 years to get a single finished product. Mm. But some of that's down to us as a brand. As I sort of touched on earlier, we have an approach that embodies slow fashion. If you're a larger brand with a large bankroll, you can just chuck cash around and shorten development timelines. But personally, I don't believe chucking money at fragrance or product formulations is the right formula to create a sort of outstanding product. But setbacks have been sort of inevitable throughout that process.
I see. So how does it work when you get the sample back and it's like, okay, I'm happy with this now? Are you kind of the nose and then you put it to a panel? How do you test it to make sure that it's not just your overriding opinion that you're going to, you know, pull the trigger on?
Yeah, absolutely. So we work with a small team of perfumers. I'm not trained as a perfumer myself. I have quite good knowledge in this area, but I wouldn't profess to be one. So it's a combination of myself, our perfumers, and then literally testing with the general public as far as possible. It's a long old process to produce a single fragrance. You know, we've done on certain fragrances countless revisions to get to where we are. And I think I keep going back to the shaving products, but they're something that's incredibly tricky to grade. And just to give an example of some of the issues we've had in with them, in a recent formulation, the addition of vitamin E turned the product bright pink. There's weird things, you know, when you're dealing with cosmetics, there's all kinds of chemical reactions, etc., going on. So it can take a really long time, and that's not the smell we're talking about. That's performance and the aesthetic sort of look of the product. It does take a very long time.
Interesting. And on the look of the product, you've got to have a lot of thought towards the branding, I guess. So how did you approach like the branding, the labels, the name, design of the bottle? This all comes, I guess, you know, under the same heading. You know, talk to me about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, I think one of the first pieces of advice I was given is considering marketing. Someone once said to me, it will take you at least twice the investment made to create a fragrance to market it. And I think, you know, that's a very accurate very accurate thought. But as a small business, we have to consider every marketing spend very carefully. But we haven't tried to cut costs on the packaging. And as a generic rule, you know, we take inspiration as a brand from the bizarre and eccentric, especially historical characters. We're inspired by folklore, sort of lofty ideals and good all-round British etiquette. So as I said earlier, we're based in rural Shropshire, which is sort of a land forgotten by time in many ways, and a land littered with stories, eccentric characters, and it's a place steeped in folklore. And I think this, alongside working with the team of sort of creatives, we're never short of inspiration. And indeed, there's probably another 5 or 6 fragrances that we're just dying to bring out, but I sort of have to temper this desire at the moment and ensure we're not running before jogging. I won't say walking, as I feel we're sort of already doing that reasonably successfully. But
Well, you mentioned the razors. I'm curious about that. So where are they made, for example, and the grooming range? Did you release everything simultaneously, or did the fragrance come out first and then the add-ons after and the accessories?
No. So the fragrance shaving products was a sort of add-on to the fragrance range. It's they're a relatively new release to us here. The shaving products are due to be released in the next 3 months, but they're such a natural companion to our fine fragrance ranges. And the inspiration was, as I said, was my dissatisfaction with the myriad of sort of shaving products we currently see for sale. I mean, just myself alone, I tend to have a more sensitive skin type, and I found many products out there would cause shaving rash. I also wanted to reduce plastic waste, and many shaving products just seemed dull visually and detract, in my opinion, from the bathroom environment. So it was these factors that drove me to explore this side of the brand. In terms of where they're produced in Sheffield. So the heart of metalworking country. And
yeah, the lead mill industry,
And so as with all our products, made here in the UK by hand, by artisans that have been honing their craft for years. And as I said, our shaving creams and aftershave balms haven't been released yet, but in the next 3 months, we're hoping to get those on the shelf. As I said earlier, it comes back to we don't rush the process. It's taken a considerable amount of time to get finished products that we're really happy with and happy to put our brand on.
Are you looking to do any collaborations at this point? Or are you just trying to firm up the name yourself, you know, make sure the brand is established before you kind of join forces with anyone else?
Yeah, we've had a few discussions. Nothing I could sort of release, but the sort of first, I think our main priority is to get the brand name out there. It's we believe we're offering exceptional British made eccentric products, and we really want to get the brand out there. So that's something that we're going to be working very hard across 2024 to do, because the marketing side of it, things we're up against an industry where sort of companies have £1 million plus marketing budgets, and that's nothing. So it is hard to get noticed. So we're planning a few sort of cool, quite unique marketing campaigns, which I can touch on in a bit, but
yeah, please, if you can, whatever you got.
So probably can't go into them actually, because none of the names are confirmed.
You see, I tried to get it out of you, but you.
I probably shouldn't. But cool things to do with country houses, vintage sports cars, and some quite well-known names.
Awesome. All right, listen. Watch this space. Richard, it was a real pleasure talking to you and really getting into the weeds, finding out how fragrance houses come about. It's fascinating to me. And I mean, do you candles as well? You're thinking about candles, or is that too left field?
No, we haven't ever considered candles. I think what we're trying to do now is really get well known for the ranges we're actually producing. And it might be something that one day we look into.
Because I've got an idea for a candle range.
Go on, hit me up with it.
All right, so I was in Austin a couple of weekends ago, and I was in this store, and they had all these candles, and each name of this candle was like a Bowie song, right? Space Oddity or whatever. I'm sure they're infringing on someone's IP, no doubt. The Bowie estate, for one. But it's a quiet enough store where I feel like they can just do a small run on it, make a quick buck, which I know goes against the complete ethos of what you guys do. But going back to my idea, I always think there could be a great idea for a candle that has like something James Bond orientated. You can call it the Odd Job. You could call it the Vespa or something like that. Then people would go, oh, brilliant. I know a mate who's a Bond fan. I'm one myself. You know, if someone bought me something like that, it could be... Oh, how about this? It could be in the shape of a martini glass. So you wouldn't even have to have that much wax. All right.
Yeah,
I'm going off piste, but that's
I like it. I like it. A slightly definitely a gentleman's candle perhaps.
But
reminds me, well, we produce a fragrance called Audacity, which the notion there is quite similar. But
like it. Well, listen, if people want to check out the range, The accessories and the fragrances, head over to plowdenandfallow.com. We'll leave a link in the show notes. In the meantime, Richard, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and thanks for taking your time out.
My pleasure, Pete. Thanks very much.
You've been listening to the Menswear Style podcast. Be sure to head over to menswearstyle.co.uk for more menswear content, and email info@menswearstyle.co.uk if you'd like to be a future guest on the show. Finally, please help support the show by leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to this podcast. Until next time.